Well, a significant international report on China's dealings with the Uyghur minority group in Xinjiang province has been released this month. It's had a little bit of coverage here in Australia, but not a lot. Now, the report is significant because it's the first to find that China is in breach of the 1948 Genocide Convention, and that in turn has geopolitical implications. It was released by the Washington-based New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy and the Montreal-based Raoul Wallenberg Center for Human Rights. Jonah Diamond is the report's principal author. He's a human rights lawyer at the Raoul Wallenberg Centre. Thank you for joining Saturday Extra, Jonah.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the whole point of this investigation, as I understand it, was to test whether China was in fact breaching the Genocide Convention. I mean, there's been all sorts of talk around, but that was the essence of it, isn't it? Is it surprising in a way that that hasn't been assessed before?
Yep, that's exactly it. And we started this project 6 months ago. And the sort of narrow question one can say is that we looked at China's breach of the Genocide Convention, particularly Article 2, which provides the only definition we have for genocide. And so we've been working on this for months, you know, half a year, and we've been gathering over 50 experts from around the world for contributions and consultations. And this includes experts with judicial and investigative experience in these contexts, those most intimately involved in the evidence gathering over the course of China's crackdown in the region, and those who have sat on independent international commissions for mass atrocity crimes, the UN Security Council, president of the International Criminal Court Bar Association, international law experts, genocide scholars. And so this is significant in the sense that we are an international body of authorities who have come to an agreement as to this breach of the only binding treaty on the matter, which is the Genocide Convention.
And just describe to us too, maybe before I go to exactly the definition of genocide, we should say, how did you investigate this? Because access to the Xinjiang province and the Uyghurs is, of course, very difficult. So before we go further, how did you come to these conclusions?
Yeah, so there's a number of institutes and scholars and experts who have been collecting evidence for years now, starting in even 2014, but then more in 2017 as the de-extremification laws came into effect, criminalizing virtually all Islamic markers and the roundup of Uyghurs. So we have a mass of evidence that has been compiled already up until 2020. And as of late, particularly with the COVID-19 lockdowns, as you say, it's been difficult, a little harder to get information from the region. We have some a recent Washington Post article to that effect. And it's important to note, though, that we have consolidated a Xinjiang victim database online, which compiled over 13,000 victim testimony. And so the report, in terms of firsthand testimony, only deals with those who have survived the camps, which are both rare and dangerous for those who have escaped, managed to escape, but also have been willing to put themselves and their family at risk at home. But the evidence we compiled has really been building over the years, and that includes government manuals, planning documents, official statements, statistical yearbooks, white papers, reports, satellite imagery, as well as expert analyses of all of this data. And so it's really just a compilation of all of this into a consolidated form and analyzed by legal experts and experts on the region and genocide.
And I gather a lot of it was pro bono work.
Exactly, entirely pro bono.
So remind us of some of the reported activities against the Uyghurs, please.
Yes, yeah, so I think it's important to because of the common misconceptions as to what genocide actually means. So we're focusing narrowly on Article 2. So genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a protected group as such, including the five acts. And as we found in our analysis and examination, each provision has been breached. And that includes A, killing members of the group. So a large number of deaths have already occurred in the camps, and there have been selective death sentences by execution or long-term imprisonment, particularly of cultural and community leaders or imams or religious scholars. B, there's causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. And as I say, for each category, I encourage the listeners to take a look at all of the available evidence, but for each one, we provide significant and systematic evidence supporting each act. And so there's already victim corroborating each other as to the methods of torture, both physical and psychological, sexual violence, widespread rape going on within the camps, Uyghurs indoctrinated on the backwardness of their identity, forced to confess to their backwardness, told they're not human. C, there's the deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction. And so all of the atrocities really have to be viewed together, including Uyghurs of childbearing years being rounded up and detained in unlivable, unhygienic and overcrowded conditions, the birth prevention campaign in the region, the transfer of Uyghurs to forced labor schemes. These are all part of the circumstances that lead to a slow death. Number four, there's imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. And we've shown the systematic birth prevention campaign in the Uyghur region combined with forced IUD insertions, abortions and injections within the camps while Uyghur men of childbearing years are detained. And E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And so we've documented how Uyghur children have been institutionally sent to state-run Chinese language facilities with Han child-rearing methods. And so so all of this evidence has been compiled to show that each act has been met under the Genocide Convention.
And again, the wording of that is the Commission of Genocide requires, quotes, the intent to destroy in whole or in part a protected group as such. So this is what you're saying, that you have come to the conclusion, and so has the people who've advised you, that this is the intent?
Indeed, and this is something that, you know, some might have been stuck on in the past, the intent to destroy the group's existence, which in the report is evidenced by objective measures. It's not measured by a specific statement by, you know, President Xi as to eliminating the entire group's existence. It's by overall policy, the law, the destructive campaigns, and the selective targeting of leaders. All of these atrocities and policies really must be viewed in their totality, which amounts to an intent to destroy the group's existence in whole or in substantial part. And so whatever the government stated objectives as to whether they're fighting extremism or terrorism or separatism in the region, the intent under international law is examined as what is objectively occurring. And so by 2017, we already saw an entire group terrorized and traumatized, and undoubtedly now we see the destruction of the group's existence as well.
Now, can you remind me just a bit of context? My memory is that there was a very dangerous effort to blow up a station, a train station at the time, which is, I think, 2014. And I think that's when President Xi Jinping launched the People's War on Terror and making, in effect, the Xinjiang province the front line. Am I right there? And also, can you sketch, is there history between these groups and the central government? Does that also inform the way you're thinking?
Right, so the historical background goes back years and perhaps over the past century even, and then in the 50s with Han colonization in the region. But the report really focuses on the key events that have unfolded since 2014. As you say, since President Xi unleashed the war on terror, largely making the front line the areas where Uyghurs constitute around 90%, according to the latest statistics. And so we're examining the collective punishment and atrocities being committed against the Uyghurs as a group, which is actually quite easy to measure when you see the extent of Uyghur population demographics within the particular region where these are being carried out. And so it's a little outside of my expertise to discuss the historical background as to what occurred prior to 2014. But under international law, what we're really examining is whether a genocide is being committed, and that
Yes, I understand completely. I can imagine your ambivalence. It was quite interesting to read into it to see that there have been sort of this has been there have been centuries actually of of ill will between the different groups. It reminded me a little bit of reading about the Chechens actually in the what were the old Soviet Union and you know the behaviour then of Vladimir Putin, if you recall. So obviously these sort of long-standing issues that then deteriorate badly. China is one of the 152 countries, isn't it, which are signatories to the Genocide Convention, and it denies absolutely that genocide is being practiced in the Xinjiang province. I think the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi described your report and others as a rumor fabricated with ulterior motives and a lie through and through. It couldn't be more preposterous. I suppose that must fill you with despair.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as someone working for a human rights organization and an international human rights lawyer, you know, we would ask that China provide unfettered access to the region if that's the case. I think that's a form of self-incrimination that they're not providing actual unfettered access despite years of asking for that.
What do they say is happening there?
Yeah, so... You mean as to the extent of...
Well, the camps and, you know, there's obviously a massive... In this war on terror that they say, I mean, do they provide you with any information as to their explanation of what they're doing?
Well, I know that they're engaged in a serious disinformation campaign. I mean, some of the... rape victims have been blamed for having character issues, and a lot of this sort of disinformation is going around. English-speaking journalists have been ejected from the country, and so it's to take official Chinese government statements for their word would be a little naive at this point. Mm.
Now, I mean, the difficulty, this poses difficulties for places like Australia and many other countries with strong economic ties to China. An attempt by the Australian Independent Senator Rex Patrick to pass a motion that would recognise the genocide failed this week. Or as I heard a BBC interviewer ask an American ex-State Department man, can you both liaise with the Chinese on useful adaptation to climate change, as well as condemning Xinjiang. Now, you know, how does one do this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I heard Foreign Minister Payne mention that Australia has a different approach to the term genocide, and that other countries have different mechanisms that to come to the declaration. But we only have the Genocide Convention, and that's the definition we're provided with. And so I would hope that parliamentarians would not treat this as a partisan issue, particularly naming something for what it is, based on a factual and legal analysis by a growing list of international independent experts. So this is, you know, we've done the legwork here, and so the government should seriously assess the evidence as to what is occurring. And so genocide, to make that statement, is a symbolic statement, and it doesn't require any sort of, I know it's standing up to China, and it's actually, I mean, it's important for Australia to work in concert with its allies on this, and Canada, the Netherlands, and the US has already labeled it as such. But now that we have this independent expert report, we can no longer hide behind asking for a rigorous analysis when we have one.
China doesn't recognize the International Court of Justice or or the International Criminal Court. And I'm wondering, therefore, in your view, what should be, last question, the international response to the Uyghur situation? What avenues are there for action?
Absolutely. And China, yeah, sits on the Security Council as well. So in my personal capacity, you know, because our report doesn't make any policy recommendations, but I would say that countries have to make decisions as their obligations under the Genocide Convention require, both to end complicity and to prevent and punish the crime. So that includes continuing to ask for unfettered access, to ban goods sourced in the region or produced with forced Uyghur labor, ensure that no information or technology is provided that will contribute to this genocidal system, impose human rights or Magnitsky sanctions. I know Australia is discussing passing a Magnitsky or human rights-related act, but this is an important way to hold those most responsible for the genocide to account, as well as fast-tracking Uyghur refugees and potentially relocating the 2022 Olympics, and highlighting, and this is just one last important point, highlighting the internationally known cases which demonstrate that this is not about re-education, but it's about destroying the group and those who have been sentenced to death for long-term prison sentences, like media owner Ekpar Assat or Dr. Rahila Daoud, who dedicated their lives to building a better China.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jonah Diamond from the Raoul Wallenberg Centre, and we'll have details on that report on our website.